Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, kettles, fridges, heaters and fans all set to be banned in public sector offices next week. But can workers object? Homework, the unnecessary scourge of parents and school children, or an essential part of getting ready for exam study? Adam Maguire has been taking a look at the business of cookery books in the age of free online recipes. Donald Trump sets his cap at the White House again, but will Republicans back his bid for 2024? And GP Dr. Maura Finn will be discussing blood donation, blood transfusion and blood type. So if you have any questions for Maura, do send them in now. Our text number is 51551. You can email todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter. We are at Today with Claire. Now, a series of top-level diplomatic talks are taking place this morning after a Russian-made missile struck Poland yesterday, killing two people. NATO and G7 leaders held an emergency meeting on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Bali and offered their full support for and assistance with Poland's investigation into the explosion. In the last hour, Reuters has reported that the US President Joe Biden has told NATO members that the missile was from the Ukrainian air defence. Well, elsewhere, Russia pounded Ukrainian cities and energy facilities last night in what is claimed to be its heaviest wave of strikes in the war to date. In a moment, I'll speak to John Everard, former British ambassador to Belarus, and Hamish de Breton Gordon, who's former British Army officer and fellow at Magdalen College in Cambridge. But first, I'm joined on the line by Diana Magne, Moscow correspondent with Sky News. Diana, thank you very much for taking our call. Now, as I said, the US president says it was a Ukraine air defense missile that was responsible for that blast. There was a lot of confusion following this event last night. What's being said about it today in Russia?
Well, the Russian Ministry of Defense came out with a statement yesterday saying that it had nothing to do with them and that all you had to do was look at the debris to ascertain that it wasn't a Russian-made weapon. And they've added to that statement this morning saying that they hit only precision targets, that any of the targets, any of the damage in Kyiv wasn't caused by them, but was caused by Ukrainian air defense systems. And they didn't shoot anything within 35 kilometers of the Polish-Ukrainian border. And Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesman, has also said that this incident has nothing to do with them and was caused, as you just heard the NATO source quoting Joe Biden as saying, it was caused by a Ukrainian air defense system. Because, as you say, yesterday we saw this massive wave of Russian strikes on Ukrainian energy infrastructure and also, the Russians say, on their military high command. And of course, Ukrainian air defense systems went into action to try and bring some of those missiles down. So it would appear that the general consensus is moving towards the fact that this was the result of an S-300 Ukrainian air defense system shooting down a Russian missile that was coming at a target within Ukraine. But we still can't be absolutely sure, and there are a number of possibilities. But essentially, this should be something that if you get forensic weapons inspectors on the scene, you can see the trajectory, you know if Ukrainian air defense were sent up. It should be easy to ascertain, which is why I think those leaders at G20 and NATO ambassadors now are trying to keep a cool head about their reaction until they are able to ascertain exactly what happened.
But Russia has highlighted what they have said so far and claimed that this finger pointing at them as they see it could lead to a further escalation. That's the message that's been coming from the Kremlin today.
Well, I mean, they've said that this is a provocation and an attempt to escalate. But I mean, both sides say that. That's what Volodymyr Zelensky said last night, too. I think we can strip that away and stick with the facts. You know, whenever there is an accusation made at either party, then the other side says it's an attempt to escalate. So I don't think that I think the Russian position is pretty clear. What they are trying to say is this had nothing to do with us, and wipe their hands of it. You know, whether that is definitely the case remains to be seen, and it is difficult to take any Russian claim as particularly credible at this stage in the war or even generally. But it would appear as though the consensus is growing that this probably was a result of an anti-aircraft missile bringing down an incoming missile. And we don't know whether the remnants that hit that Polish grain farm are the remnants of the anti-aircraft system or of the incoming Russian missile.
Okay, so that remains to be seen. The general point, though, the message coming from the G20, the condemnation of Russia has been very strong. Was that to be expected, or from Russia's point of view, from what you're hearing there, are they in any way taken aback by how vociferous the condemnation of the Kremlin has been?
I think Russia is perfectly aware of how the rest of the world feels about them. I think it's notable that the Chinese refused to include the word war in the final communique in a gesture of sort of conciliation with Russia. So I think Russia will hold on to that. But it's part of the reason why Vladimir Putin himself didn't want to go to the summit. I mean, the Kremlin said that it was because he had conflicting diary schedules. But the fact of the matter is, it's very clear that he knew that if he appeared there, he would be shunned by world leaders. It would be deeply embarrassing. It was preferable for him to send his foreign minister to experience that rather than to go himself and not be able to control the narrative, which would then be shown on state TV.
Diana, thank you very much for joining us. Diana Magne there, the Moscow correspondent with Sky News. And as I said, John Everard and Hamish de Breton Gordon are also with me on the line. John, everyone was very nervous when this first happened last night, but Diana has described it well there, saying that we're seeing cool heads at the G20 in response to this. What's your own assessment of where we are today?
Well, cool heads, as she rightly said. I think that the Russians will have been deeply dismayed by the strength of the statement that came out of the G20. But it's encouraging, I think, that people have drawn back from the instinctive reaction that this must have been a Russian missile to look more carefully at the evidence on the ground. I don't think the missile experts have yet said conclusively what kind of missile it was, but I expect they'll be able to see that soon because, as you've seen from the photographs, there were some quite large chunks of missile that landed in a grain farm, so in soft Polish mud. They'll be in good condition. It shouldn't be difficult to analyze them. The key thing is, was this a missile, an S-300 anti-aircraft missile, just off the production line, so to speak, or was it one of the ones the Russians have modified to be a ground-to-ground missile? You can tell from the debris whether it's been modified or not, and from that, you'll be able to tell whether it was a Russian or Ukrainian missile. We should know in the next few hours. Mm-hmm.
And Hamish, you've been looking at the geography of this and what that tells us about who might be responsible.
Well, again, I agree with what everybody else has said. We need to get the full details here. I think what's absolutely clear, the Russians fired over 90 missiles yesterday, mainly at civilian targets. So they are entirely responsible for the deaths associated with them. And as it appears that this S-300 has taken out either an incoming Russian missile or it is a modified one, as suggested, there are two Polish dead people. People in Poland are absolutely terrified. It's all very well for us to sit here in the UK and Ireland, but actually, if you're on the border and this is happening, it is terrifying. And I think it's very important that NATO and the West really step up its efforts to prevent this escalating further and give it the Ukrainians all they can to prevail in this. I mean, I would also say on the geographic location, you know, if this missile was aimed at Lviv, which is sort of 30 k's from the border there, it has travelled quite a long way. Without being a missile expert, if it was a S-300 taking out a Russian cruise missile, you would not expect the debris to be so far spread. But let's wait and see what the experts say.
Mm-hmm. And John, much of the talk about how NATO will respond is focused on Article 4. Explain to us what that means.
Article 4 calls on the parties to consult rather than to leap into military action. So if Article 4 is invoked, then NATO will gather, consider its response, and it has to form a consensus about what to do next. Now, nobody has suggested that this was a deliberate act of war against Poland. It was an accident of some kind, and as I was saying earlier, we need to find out exactly what happened. I think it's most unlikely that we will see any kind of retaliation from NATO against this this event, but I think it's quite likely that NATO will decide that missile defences need to be boosted. In Poland, very probably, quite probably too, we'll see enhanced missile defence assistance to Ukraine to form a kind of shield to prevent Russian missiles coming so close to NATO territory in future.
You'd wonder what the response will be from the Russians if that happens.
Yes, they will stomp and storm, and they will claim this is further evidence that what is going on is actually a war between Holy Mother Russia and what they call the collective West, rather than the result of neo-imperialist attacks on unfortunate Ukraine. But they've been stomping and storming for a long time now. We've kind of got used to it.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to that, Hamish? The response from Russia if NATO decides to beef up its missile defences in Poland?
Well, I think I think there are a number of things NATO should do. I agree, beefing up defences. There's also talk of creating a sort of no-fly zone along the border of Ukraine with Poland and other NATO countries. This would only need to be sort of, you know, 10 miles or so to make sure that these accidents, which seems a rather odd word to use, don't happen in future, because, you know, we are only one sort of miscalculation, misjudgment and misinformation away from escalation. It could have been very easy last night for people to jump to conclusions that perhaps this morning we might have said were unnecessary. So anything we can do to make sure that we don't escalate is something we should consider seriously. And a no-fly zone, which could be policed from the western side of Ukraine border rather than actually getting NATO aircraft in direct confrontation with Russia, is something I think we should consider. But I think also NATO needs to make it absolutely clear to the Russians that it would act proactively if it looks like Russia was firing these type of missiles into NATO countries, and they could do that by sort of taking out launchers before they launch. And I think the next stage onwards, of course, you know, there is still the whiff of nuclear in the air coming from the Russians, and we must make absolutely certain the Russians don't go there. And the way we do that is by making it completely clear to Putin and his generals that NATO would prevent them using their tactical nuclear weapons. So we need to stay on the front foot, and we need to make sure that Ukraine prevails, get back to the February 22 positions, and then start talking peace to the Russians.
Mm-hmm. But John, what do you think of Hamish's suggestions? Do you think that NATO needs to tread extremely carefully here, or is it time for some sort of definite action?
Yes, it needs to tread carefully, but I don't think that that is an argument against enhanced missile defences. A no-fly zone on the Polish side of the border, quite possibly, though the problem is that if you have... Remember, this missile struck very close to the border. The time you'd have to intercept anything, an aircraft or a missile, in that kind of no-fly zone would be very, very short. You probably wouldn't actually be able to stop any incoming missiles unless you have a no-fly zone over Ukrainian territory, which NATO ruled out some time ago. If it's established, heaven forfend, that this was a deliberate launch of a Russian missile onto the Polish territory, then we're in a whole new situation. That is a deliberate act of aggression, and at that point, I think NATO responds very robustly indeed.
You see, going back to something that Hamish said at the very start, John, the Polish people in that particular area, and indeed in the wider, right across Poland, must be absolutely terrified. We know that they have been since the start of this Russian aggression. And no matter what NATO says, the pressure that the Polish government must be under has to be immense now at this point to secure some sort of united NATO action to protect those people.
Yes, I suspect that the Poles will be asking for consultations under Article 4 and that there will be a quite definite NATO response in terms of enhanced defence in response to this incident. I think NATO does understand just how angry and understandably angry the Polish government is and how frightened Polish people are and will want to address those concerns.
Yeah, do you think, Hamish, that will play into it, that there will be a lot of pressure coming from Poland to take some very firm action here?
Well, I think so, and also other NATO countries as well. All those countries, the old Soviet countries are now part of NATO. There's a lot of angst coming out of them, and absolutely right. You know, this is what NATO is all about. It's kept the peace since the Second World War, and we need to prevent, you know, Russian escalation to make sure that we don't go into some sort of conflict across Europe. And just to pick up one point there on the no-fly zone, what the other speaker said is entirely right. However, if that no-fly zone also took into account 10 to 15 miles of Ukraine along the border, then anti-aircraft missiles, anti-aircraft type other weapons could be launched from Poland or somewhere else to take those weapons out before they struck into NATO countries.
So, John, why can't that happen? Why can't we have a very small area of Ukraine along the border designated as a no-fly zone?
I think it may well be something that NATO will now look at. But you'll remember that the whole question of no-fly zones over Ukrainian territory was discussed and rejected right at the beginning of this conflict. So it would mean NATO going back on a previous decision.
Do you think that now is the moment to do that?
I think possibly yes. I quite understand the anxiety. Nobody wants to have air-to-air combat between NATO aircraft and Russian aircraft over Ukraine or anywhere else for that matter. But I think given what's happened, a limited no-fly zone over certain parts of Ukraine might just be on the cards now.
Hamish, in general terms, and just finally, how do you read the current situation in Ukraine? Because there was a time when people might have hoped that we could see an end to this by Christmas. People took hope from the Russian withdrawal from Kherson. We're in a very different place today.
Well, we are, but we heard yesterday from intelligence agencies that the Russians are rapidly running out of missiles, rapidly running out of ammunition. And, of course, we've seen their strategic defeat in Kherson. They're very much on the back foot. This is the time for NATO to keep supporting Ukraine, to get them on the front foot, get the Russians out of Ukraine so that we can then sue for peace. I am sure that the Russian people cannot be blinding to what is going on, in their name, the amount of civilians who are being killed in Ukraine. And that's why I think we need to do something. We didn't in Syria, and we saw what happened there with the thousands and thousands of civilians who were killed. This is a time where we need to do all we can to prevent civilian casualties, which is why I support a limited no-fly zone, and to keep the pressure up. We must prevent the Russians escalating further, and their people must see what's going on and must want peace as much as the rest of us do.
Hamish de Bretton-Gordon and John Everard, thank you both for joining us. Coming up next on the programme, appliances like kettles, fridges, heaters, fans, toasters, all set to be banned from public sector offices from next week.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.